Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today is the auspicious day of the disappearance from this world, from our mortal vision, of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the pioneer of the program for benedicting the entire world with Krishna consciousness, according to the instructions and desire of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's known as the pioneer of this program because he was the first to send publications of the pure Vaishnav line to the Western world, and he wanted that, he foresaw that. He wasn't the only one to foresee it at that time. There were others also, because the British were in India and globalization was starting, and the British were, some of them were trying to convert Indians into Christians, and some of the Indians were thinking, hey, we can go back there and give them what we've got also. And that started famously with certain Swami who went there and made some impression, not exactly the right impression, to be euphemistic. He saw that and he knew of the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prithivite Ache Jato Nagaradigram, Savatra Prachar Hoibe Moranam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that his name would be preached in every town and village of the world. And in the late 19th century, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, he wrote in Bengali, Sanskrit, English, and even in Persian Urdu, which he learned for his magisterial work, because even though the British were ruling India, the jurisprudence system was still influenced by the previous dispensation, which was the Muslim rule. So the legal system was still influenced by that. And Hindu law also, which is going on to the present day, even though it's been altered in so many ways. So anyway, in the late 19th century, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote in Bengali, that has been translated into English. He wrote, this is in his Sajana Toshani new magazine, which he started, the Dharma preached by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is universal and not exclusive. In other words, not only for Bengalis or Hindus, it's for everyone. The principle of Kirtan as the future church of the world invites all classes of men, without distinction of caste or clan, to the highest cultivation of the spirit. I was thinking that here, actually, we're doing quite good in that respect. We have whites, blacks, in-betweens, and Latino. We don't have Vietnamese, Chinese, Korean, Japanese type. Tough one, tough nuts to crack, but we have that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, no doubt, will be very pleased with this. No doubt. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is smiling on this. That everyone is joining together in glorifying Krishna by chanting his holy names. It appears, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that this church will spread worldwide and replace all sectarian churches, which exclude outsiders from the precincts of the mosque, church, or temple. Lord Chaitanya did not advent to liberate only a few men in India. Rather, his main objective was to emancipate all living entities of all countries throughout the entire universe and to propagate the eternal Dharma. Lord Chaitanya states in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, in every town, country and village my name will be sung. There is no doubt that this unquestionable order will come to pass. He believed it. It would have been difficult to believe at that time. but he believed it. Although there is still no pure society of Vaishnavas, that was founded later by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in which he made an arrangement where people could live together only purely practicing, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he revived the Vishva Vaishnava Sabha, later rechristened Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha, of devotees. He spread Nam Hatha, devotees. He got people chanting Hare Krishna. It wasn't only him, actually. He was a prominent figure, but there were many among the English educated, actually. Many of them were English educated, the first generation of English educated Bengalis. Oh, I don't know where to begin. There was a lot of religious foment going on in Bengal and in North India, throughout North India. One of the results of that, in North India came out the Arya Samaj, which was very influential. And then in Bengal, there was the Brahma Dharma became prominent at one time. And then later on, there was the Ramakrishna Mission. And there were different ideas, because what had happened was the British had come and introduced a completely different way of thinking, the British education. And they attacked what we now call Hindu Dharma. They attacked it as being irrational, backward, immoral, and many Indians went along with that, the more educated ones. So the Arya Samaj was in it, and the Brahma Dharma, there were attempts to revive the Arya Samaj was an attempt. In Swami Dayananda, what he imagined to be the original culture. And then casteless also, Arya Samaj, theoretically. And then the Brahma Dharma was some kind of mixture of Christianity and Hinduism and some kind of cocoon. But it became very prominent in Bengal for some time. But it's hardly influential at all now. And what Brahma has just merged back into Hinduism. That's all. There's no pure society of Vaishnavas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was spreading Chaitanya, and he was writing, and he was personally preaching. But it was, what did he found? Navadvip Dhamma Pracharani Sabha, Nanam Hartas, Vishva Vaishnav Sabha. But it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, first of all, founded the Sri Chaitanya Math in Mayapur, and then the Bhaktivinoda Asan in Calcutta, and that was the Bhaktivinoda Asan in Calcutta, that was one. What we would nowadays call a preaching center. And that was the home of the Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha, the universal organization of the kings of the Vaishnavas. So they operate under that name. And that later, that came to be known as the Gaudiya Mission, with various mutts here and there. So that was the first pure society of Vaishnavas in that era, in which those who lived in the centers of Chaitanya Math and those who were to be initiated Bhaktivinoda Thakur started initiating with very strict standards. So following all the rules, pure Vaishnavas in the sense of following all the rules. Fish eating was a really tough one for most Bengalis to overcome. Prominent in this there was a revival of Chaitanya Vaishnavism, of promoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that was done in various ways. Some wanted to promote him as the to promote Bengali, you can't exactly say nationalism, but Bengali superiority, the Bengali identity. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the symbol of the Bengali identity. And that he was open to everyone, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even up to the present, until recently, the communists were very prominent in West Bengal. And even many communists, although they didn't like Vaishnavas in general, but many of them appreciated Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he showed no distinction of caste. He was open to everyone. So Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur revived that pure society. Oh, I was going to say, prominent was Shishir Kumar Ghosh, he was a prominent intellectual and businessman, in as much as he founded the very the Amrita Bazaar Patrika daily newspaper, and then Jugantar and other. I don't know if that merged later, but anyway, Amrita Bazaar Patrika was a very influential newspaper in Bengali, anti-British and pro. Shishir Kumar Ghosh was very pro-Vaishnavism, and he wrote a large book in Bengali in three volumes, Amiya Nimai Charit, the nectarian pastimes and life and of Nimai, which is still in print. So that was very influential. That was, and then in English he wrote an abridged version of that called Lord Gauranga. So he was very prominent also, and he was close with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They worked together. And there are many others also. But Shishir Kumar Ghosh, he could never give up fish eating. I believe it was his great-grandson, Tarun Kanti Ghosh, was the home minister in West Bengal. And he met Prabhupada several times. He's very appreciative of what Prabhupada was doing. That was the last Congress government in West Bengal before the commies came in. And he was very, very appreciative. But also, he couldn't give up eating fish. It was just... So, Hare Krishna. So, pure society of Vaishnavas, we can see, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He revived that. The consciousness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not only revived by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bengal. Shishir Kumar Ghosh and others were also prominent in doing that. Although Bhaktivinoda Thakur was seen as the leader by all of them. Shishir Kumar Ghosh was the one who called Bhaktivinoda Thakur the seventh Goswami. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur really took the lead in that. But the actually establishing a society, drawing line, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur first of all wanted to bring people into consciousness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings. And he wanted to purify that, which he did by speaking and preaching and writing so many books. But it was really for Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur to really draw the line and say, hey, this is it. This is the way to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not that you do it any way you like. And in fact, Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur rejected so many manifestations of what were considered traditional Gauriya Vaishnavism. In so many ways he rejected. For instance, the initiation system by family lines only. That was a big thing for which he received a lot of opposition. And various Sahajya festivals. And in general, the attempt to go right to the top, to the intimacies of Radha Krishna Leela, without starting at the bottom, into the very esoteric love pastimes of Radha and Krishna without even following regulative principles. Now, it wasn't that no one in Bengal followed regulative principles, but it wasn't stipulated. And many of the those who were initiating, there were brahmanas, mostly from Nityananda Vamsa, Advaita Vamsa, that descendants of family lines, either directly from Advaita or not directly from Nityananda, but from disciples of Birchandra, his son. So they, as brahmanas, many of them followed, at least at that time. That means they didn't eat fish. but it was declining also. The tobacco chewing had been adopted. That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's one of the things that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't like about Bipin Bihari Goswami, who was the formal initiating guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had a habit of chewing tobacco. So the lines weren't drawn very clearly, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, look, you want to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you've got to be pure. There are principles you have to follow. You just can't say, I'm a Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava. You've got to actually follow. He made standards. So, getting back to this quote, although there is still no pure society of Vaiṣṇavas, Lord Chaitanya's prophetic words will in a few days come true, I am sure. Why not? Nothing is absolutely pure in the beginning. From imperfection, purity will come about. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was involved with a society of, he made big preaching and big programs, and many people came in, and it wasn't absolutely pure. There was no standard of purity set. But they're promoting kirtan and then discussion of the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and giving Bengali people in particular faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which had been waning under attack from it wasn't only the British who were attacking. Actually, the British didn't attack that much the public, because they educated Bengalis to attack their own people, their own culture. They educated them, and then the educated Bengalis would tell all the people that, look, what are we doing? We have this rubbish religion. And that's why they thought they had to make a Brahma religion. And later it was not Ramakrishna, but Vivekananda who stepped out. He was the first one, Hindu pride. He didn't use that term, but he promoted that. So, continuing, very soon, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the unparalleled path of Harinam Sankirtan will be propagated all over the planet. Oh, for that day when the fortunate English, French, Russian, Prussian means German, and American people will take up banners, mridangas, and kartels and perform kirtan through their streets and towns. When will that day come? Oh, for the day when the Western fair-skinned man from one side, while chanting Jai Satchinandana Ki Jai, will extend their arms and, embracing the devotees of our country, come from another side, treat us with brotherly feelings. Instead of, at that time, the whites, they completely looked down on the Indians. Inferior race. In all respects, they thought. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't say, when will we crush them under our feet? He said, when will they join together? When will that day be? On such a day they will say, oh dear Aryan brothers. That was another big topic at the time. Then the Arya Samaj came up. That was before Hitler misappropriated the term Aryan. Our dear Aryan brothers, we have taken shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, who is the ocean of transcendental love. Kindly embrace us. When will that day come? That day will witness the holy transcendental Vaishnava praying to be the only Dharma. And like rivers meeting the ocean, all narrow creeds will mix with the unlimited Vaishnava Dharma. When will that day come? So he was looking forward to that. Therefore, in the 1972 edition of Bhagavad Gita As It Is, you'll find the pictures of Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisthan Sosar Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's written, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the pioneer of the program for benedicting the entire world with Krishna consciousness. So in this way, he said he envisioned it. He made a start for doing it. He gave that spirit to Bhaktisthan Sosar Thakur, who sent missionaries to Europe, and it really unfolded with His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. That's not all about him. He revealed Mayapur Dham. We say about Jagannath Das Babaji that he confirmed that. But actually it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur who searched out for the real birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and discovered it. Gaurave Bhava Bhumes Trang Nirdeshta Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarvabhuma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha. He Nirdeshta, he ascertained, yes, this is it. But it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur who discovered it, and he discovered Navadvip Dham in as much as he revealed it by his transcendental vision. Otherwise, just fields in Bengal with the Ganga flowing through it and the Jalangi or Sarasvati flowing through it, and it just looked like pretty much any other part of Bengal. But he revealed all the different places of pastimes in his Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, his book. He wrote so many books and songs. And we can talk about his life story, so to speak, which we should do because it's all transcendental. But really his heart we know from his writings. Mostly nowadays he's known through his songs. We in ISKCON, we know just a few of his songs, but still in the Gaudiya Math branches and sub-branches, still many devotees, they know many of his songs. It's easier for them, if the Bengalis and Oriyas, because they can automatically, you need to read the translation of this song, Oh Hey Vaishnava Thakur, which we just sung, offering Ganga to Ganga. He composed this song, but for any Bengali, it's just like when we speak in English, we can all understand it. So the song's in Bengali, and any Bengali can understand. Actually, some of the terms, they're technical, Choy Bega Domi, they won't understand what that is unless they know our Vaishnav philosophy. Otherwise, Dhyapada Chaya, Shodha Hey Amai. Yeah, it's Vaishnava language, but it's very simple, sweet, and easy to understand. So his heart he has revealed in his books, his writings. How much did he write? How much did he research? Books and magazine articles, publishing magazines. He started this Sajjana Toshani magazine. There were actually quite a few Vaishnav magazines at that time in Bengal. It was the efflorescence of the printed word and spreading of education. I mean, there was a scope, and there was a postal service. So all these things came together so you could have subscriptions and all over Bengal like this. So he wrote so many articles, so many books, which are so valuable. So we can really know his heart from his writings, and they are phenomenal. I was saying in the Gaudiya Math and the brand, branches and sub-branches. Many know the songs. There's also a strong consciousness in the Gaudiya Math of the link with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They all know that they all know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's the root of the Gaudiya Math, even though it was founded after his departure from this world. But Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, in founding the Gaudiya Math, it was a reification of everything that Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught. Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, he took initiation from Gorky Sawdust Babaji Maharaj, but he was trained from the beginning of his life in Krishna consciousness by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that's another gift of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He gave Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur. Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchitananda Namine. Satchitananda Namine. Gaura Shakti Sarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. Sometimes that's Satchitananda Murtaye. So we offer our obeisances to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's known as Satchitananda. In some of his early writings, he wrote under the pen name Satchitananda Premalanka. Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He is the very form of the power of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the best among the followers of Rupa Goswami. He appeared in this world. He disappeared from this world. Everyone in this world is born and dies. Sometimes people say that about Krishna also. Well, he also died. He's also born and died. But we should know that Krishna and his devotees, they appear in this world to benefit us. And although to ordinary vision they may seem like ordinary people, they're not ordinary people. Etad ishanam ishasya prakritistho pitad gunai. Now yujyate sadatmasthaya yatabuddhistadashrayaha. Krishna appears in this world, but he always remains the supreme, and although he comes in the world of matter, he's not influenced by the three modes of nature. He's not influenced by matter. He remains always transcendental to that and situated in his own spiritual consciousness. And similarly, those who are fully sheltered by Krishna, they appear in this world, but they're not influenced by it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood by his activities to be an eternal associate of Krishna. So he may appear to be like an ordinary human in many ways, but he's not. Never touched by the illusory nature, always transcendental to it. He was in householder life. Grihamanda Kupam. It's called the blind well of family life. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was never entangled in material, sensuous desires like an ordinary human being. His deep attachment and love for Krishna it wasn't manifest in the beginning of his life, but it wasn't prominently manifest in the beginning of his life, but it would be a great mistake to think that because of that he had a conversion experience or something like that. Just like we see the six Goswamis, well, Rupa and Sanatan, for some time in their life they appeared to be materialistic, but they weren't. They were deeply involved with materialistic people, but they weren't materialistic. Who is Bhaktivinoda Thakur? He himself has revealed that. He has revealed in his songs that he is a maidservant of Lalita Sakhi, who is the most prominent of the friends of Srimati Radharani. Particularly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has revealed himself as Kamala Manjari, that is his name in the Leela, in the pastimes of Krishna. He's given all the details about himself. He is Bharane Tarit, his bodily luster is golden. Vasa Taravali, his dress, or her, sorry, is speckled. Speckled with stars, Taravali. Kamala Manjari is his name. He's Share Baro Barsha, Satat, Bayasha Satat. His age is always 12 and a half years old. So in this way, he's given so many details. He appeared in this world at a time approximately 350 years after the 300-something years after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was another wave of Krishna consciousness came in Bengal and Orissa with Narottam Srinivas Shyamananda. But then after their disappearance, things gradually degraded. And all kinds of misrepresentations of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure teachings came up. One Tota Ramdas Babaji, he named 13 such sects: Al Bal Kata Bhaja, Nera, Darabe Shai, Shahajya, Shaki Beki, Sharta Jat Gosai, Ati Bari, Churadhari, Goranga Nagari. He named 13, but there were many more. There was one, Akhoy Kumar Datta, who did in a sociological way, you could say. He found out so many sects going on in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of them, which was, it's still going on in Bengal, but it's not as bad as it used to be due to, actually last time I was in Bangladesh, I asked about that. Are they still going on? So yeah, but they're not dirty like they used to be. The Kala Chand Sampradaya, who they used to promote the young girls, when they get married, the husband can't enjoy them. They have to be prasad, so the guru enjoys them first. I was told they're going on, but they stopped that now due to public approbation. And all kind of, I saw myself traveling in the villages in Bengal, so many strange things. A lot of admixture of the Shakta cult mixed up with tantrism, and all kinds of strange things going on. And practically at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what the actual pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it wasn't that they were completely dead, but they were eclipsed by misrepresentations of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And then the British, because they wanted to, well, they felt that we are superior, and everything Indian must be inferior. And they, you see, our religion is very good. Our Jesus is very moral. And what do you got in your religion? And they pointed out things like this. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings had been misused by some of his followers who were quite visible, for illicit sex indulgence. So that was going on. And then there were other things also, like sati, forcible, that was going on all over India, forcible burning widows to death. And the upper class, or those who are educated by the British, among them Bengalis, they anyway felt themselves somewhat different from the Vaishnavas, because the Vaishnavas are mostly the lower class people, and very strong consciousness of caste. It's still there. We can't imagine what it was like in those days. It was so strong. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in going against this, well, actually, he did and he didn't. Anyway, that's another discussion. But the upper class Bengali society, they became disgusted, and this is our religion. They thought that Vaishnavism is the worst thing. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to deliver all the world, and in his own the own place where he appeared, people had either lost faith in it, they had either misrepresented it and were using it for immoral practices, or misapplying themselves to his teachings, or they completely rejected it. And it wasn't spreading all over the world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he showed the difference by writing books and by preaching, but his books, they stand the test of time. They're still there. And they had their influence. His books were influential. And especially when that became he established a printing, Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, under the guidance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, made printing press, and putting in writing and spreading it, book distribution, that was very influential. Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur wrote in his preface to the Jaiva Dharma, which is recognized as one of the most important books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's hard to say which are the most important books, because they're all so important. But Jaiva Dharma, Chaitanya Shikamrita, the Dashamula Tattva, which actually wasn't published as a book at that time, Harinam Chintamani, Navadvipa Mahatmya, and then all of his song books are the Amnaya Sutra, Tattva Sutra, so many, Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, so many important books. Jaiva Dharma, in his preface, Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur wrote, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an extremely dear associate of Sri Chaitanya Chandra. In course of time, when those who preached the desires of Chaitanya Dev, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Manobishta, his desires, when they had left this world to enter the Lord's eternal pastimes, the sky over Bengal slowly darkened, covered by the thick clouds of sensual enjoyment and false renunciation. The sky was covered, and the world was bereft of the rays of light coming from the Sankirtan propagated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One by one, the sun, the moon, and the unlimited stars of that sky faded from view, leaving only the occasional flash of lightning to disrupt the unending darkness of ignorance. His life, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, his mission became to re-establish and present in their original pristine purity the tenets of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whom he came to term as the Eastern Savior, because Jesus is known as the Savior. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out that, well, we have our Savior. So at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, very few people actually knew what the real teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were. It was well known, Radha Krishna Leela, in its intimacy by different Vaishnav festivals, but it was not understood that this is free from any mundane lust. the people didn't know how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so strict with Chota Haridas, for instance. They didn't know the teachings as they are. So it was a very bad time, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared at that time. He made a difference. He turned things around. And again, there are others there also. But when we look back, when we look back in time, we can see that the outstanding contribution is that of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Just like I say, Shishya Kumar Ghosh was also influential by his writings, he was a highly respected figure, but he wouldn't have turned things around because he himself wasn't following properly. He brought up a spirit of, yes, we're Bengalis, let's follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is not exactly the right understanding. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not meant for Bengalis only. And Shishya Kumar Ghosh mixed, among others, but he was in mixing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu up with the nationalism and kicked the British out and this and that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't into that at all. He was, throughout his working life, he was a servant of the British government. He wasn't into political efforts to kick out the British, but he wanted to give to the British and everyone else the sublime teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The family line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they're Kayasthas, which are, in one sense, they're considered Shudras, but they're very powerful in Bengal, very respected just behind Brahmanas at that time. At the time of the British, it was the Kayasthas who came forward, especially for British education, so they took powerful positions. But for centuries, they'd been very powerful and prominent in Vaishnava society, just like Narottam Das Thakur. And actually the same family, it's the same family line. Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in the same family line as Narottam Das Thakur, who was his brother became the local, because he was known as a Raja, because they were landholders, large landholders. So sometimes I've seen devotees in their writings, they say that Narottam Das was from a Kshatriya family, but he was called a Raja. But it wasn't a Kshatriya family, they were Kayasthas. So they were very prominent, well-placed. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has traced his family line back to Chitragupta. He's a Kayastha, right? Keeps records for Yamaraj. So he traces his family line back to that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in 1838, was born in Ulagram, also known as Birnaga. His father was Ananda Chandra Datta, his mother Jagan Mohini Devi, and his parents gave him the name Kedarnath. He wasn't raised as a Vaishnava. Kedarnath is a name of Shiva. Of course, Vaishnavas can also have names of Shiva. We find there are several. There are two prominent Chandrasekhars in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for instance. Shivananda is a very prominent devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they say he composed his first poem when he was only 2 years old. At the age of six, he knew the stories of Mahabharata and Ramayana. And from early life, he was inquisitive. What's going on in the world? that was exacerbated by a disaster that struck his family when his village he was living in was struck by cholera and most of the people died. So that was a tragic event which happened in his life, which of course he's always a pure devotee, but that really triggered his thinking about what's going on in life. But even before that, he was inquisitive about what's going on, what are people doing. He wrote his autobiography, and in that he wrote, of course he wrote it in Bengali, I'm giving a translation, whenever a festival was held at someone's house, I would go. Naturally, the village children would go. There are different festivals, religious festivals, and then there'll be wedding festivals, and when the child is brought home after the child is born, they don't immediately come home. But there's so many festivals, and then the first giving of rice, and then when the woman is pregnant, there are festivals during her pregnancy. So different festivals and rituals. He would often go and say, there was one brahmachari in the village with a temple. Inside there was a flower garden in the temple there, and an altar for fire sacrifices. The brahmachari was a tantric, which meant that he kept a human skull. And some people said that if you gave water and milk to the human skull, it will smile. But, you know, Thakur said, I went once as a child and gave the skull water, but I didn't see the skull smile. So there was also an astrologer's house in his village where he would go and they'd listen to singing performances. And then there was one old man whose job was to paint backdrops for the pujas. There's so many pujas which are going, like Durga Puja, religious festivals. And Bhaktivinoda says in his childhood he would go and sit close to that person and ask him so many questions, which he would always answer. So he asked, Bhaktivinoda asked, the mystery, that means the workman, when does God, we make the image of Durga is made, you still see in Bengal and other parts of India, they make from straw and mud, they make an image and they cover with something like plaster of Paris and then paint it. So Bhaktivinoda asks, well, when does this image actually become God? Because you start off with straw and mud, when does it actually become God? And the carpet, or the person, the painter said, when I paint its eyes, the God will come. So Bhaktivinoda in his childhood came eagerly to see, when are you going to paint the eyes? Okay, I'll come and see. He said, but I didn't see any God come. Then he asked again. He said that, well, it's made of straw and clay and chalk and you painted it. Where's God? And the old man said, well, when the Brahmins say the mantras and call, then God will come. So then Bhaktivinoda says, I went as a child to see that, but I didn't see any God come. So he asked the painter again, and he said, and then the painter told him openly, I said, I don't have any faith in all of this. I just think that the Brahmins do this as a means for taking money from the stupid people, that's all. And then again, Bhaktivinoda asked that, so why don't you tell me something about God? And he said, I only believe in one God, Parameshwar. All these gods and goddesses are all imaginary. And then he became more inquisitive. There was a Muslim who was charged to guard the treasury at their home. And Bhaktivinoda, as a child, was asking, and the Muslim man said, God's name is Khoda. That's a word used in Bengal for God. At one time, Khoda, was alone, and there was no one and nothing but him. Then he took dirt from his body and made a pancake out of it. There was one ocean at the time, he threw it into the ocean. The upper part of the pancake became the sky, and the lower part became the earth. Then Khoda created humankind, starting with Adam and Eve. We are all the descendants of Adam and Eve. So you can see how Bengali folklore became mixed with some idea from the Quran. And then he asked, Bhaktivinoda's child asked, well, who do you think Ram is? And the common answer at that time from Hindus and Muslims, that Ram and Rahim are the same. Rahim is also another name for Allah, God. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur learned from that Muslim a mantra for chasing away ghosts. It was very useful, actually. Muslims then, in Bengal up to the present day, Muslims, not only in Bengal, actually throughout India, they know many mantras and fakirs like this. They can do magic, they can cure snake bite and all kinds of things. So a lot of the folklore or tantric, what happens is whole castes would get converted to Islam because people do things by caste. So the caste who were into tantra and spells and magic, they all got converted. And so, but they go on because that's what they do. That's their caste, right? So they don't stop doing their caste work after they get converted to Islam. They go on. Practically, they remain within the caste system, but just they're Muslims, that's all. So it's all mixed. Especially in Bengal, it was all very mixed up. And there's no distinction who's Hindu, not much. Actually, it was like that throughout much of India. And still, I've seen, even recently in Telangana, the Hindus, they also celebrate, the Muslims are celebrating their festivals, the Hindus will come also, like this. So it was all mixed up. It wasn't, Islam was there, but it was, among the common people, there was no very clear distinction. That's all. You say someone's a Muslim, it means it's, maybe this is taking it too far, but it was like they're another caste, that's all. And they do certain things. They do. So how to chase away ghosts. So he taught the ghosts are the descendants of Shaitan, Satan. They're afraid of the name of Rahim. And actually, that's a fact. You don't have to use, you can use any invocation of God to drive away bad spirits. Christian, Hindu, Muslim, whatever. That's why the cross, you have a cross, if you wear a cross, then bad spirits can't attack you. And this is how you chant the name of Allah with faith, and bad spirits will go away. Of course, people nowadays, they don't even believe in bad spirits. I guess they are all bad spirits themselves. Really, it's like the bad spirits, they're not floating around at night, they're right there in the daytime in human beings, really, isn't it? Seems like that. They take a human form. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues, my maternal uncle, Parashuram Mustafi, was studying law. At first he had some faith in God, but later he gave it up. You see, it was a time in Bengal, when the British came, they really upset everything. They had railroads, and they seemed to have a superior culture, and it really shook up people's whole way of thinking. And especially they attacked the Brahminical culture, So Parashuram, his maternal uncle, he stopped believing in God, but then he still had a guru, Ram Mohan Rai, who was a Brahma, who they didn't believe in God, but they had a religion. Raja Ram Mohan, yeah, he kept that Raja thing from his Hindu background. And Bhaktivinoda says, I was just a child and I became upset. It upset me because I had belief in God, but I didn't want to go against my uncle. And his uncle Parashuram, typical thing which we hear up to the present time, that in this world there's only nature, natural forces, there's only nature, there's no God. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to see, child, Kedarnath went to see some Brahmin to ask him about this. And the Brahmin's answers made him more confused. But throughout all this, he never stopped chanting the name of Ram. When he was 11 years old, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was married. It was the common practice at that time. His wife was, he was 11, he was married to a 5-year-old girl. Not that they lived as husband, but there was all, you know the system, that they get married and then the boy and girl. I've seen in Bihar some years ago, a young girl chasing, playing with the kids. She must have been 8 years old and had the sindhur. I mean, she's married. So they go on living as kids, and when they're older, they just go and live with each other, that's all. But they know they're married, so they don't have any anxiety about who they're going to marry or this and that. It's all fixed up. So Bhaktivinoda, looking back at that, said it was like some kind of game or something. Like me and my wife were like two dolls, and others were dressing, because they'll dress them up. They'll do. So it was like you marry two dolls, and he and his wife were dolls. And he went, after the marriage, he went to his wife's home for some time. Then he came back. At the age of 6, he was sent to study Sanskrit. At the age of 7, he was sent to another. He was sent to a, for British or education under a school which was headed by a Britisher. Then he went to an English language school. Then when his maternal grandfather died, he was the big man in the area, he Bhaktivinoda and his mother came to live in Calcutta, and then he became a city boy. And from the beginning of his life, he was transferred from one school to another, and after that from one position to another in the British government. Kedarnath was one of Ishvar Chandra Vidyasagar's first students. The name of Ishvar Chandra Vidyasagar is known by everyone in Bengal, both West Bengal and Bangladesh, up to the present time. He was such a big figure in the history of Bengal. Especially he standardized the Bengali language and the lipi, the alphabetical signs and the punctuation and grammar and everything. So that was one of his contributions. He was a great scholar. It was a common thing at that time that people would talk about God and who is God and everything. I used to see this in India also when I first went in the 1970s. That on the train, people would discuss and have arguments. Not nowadays. That's been killed. They talk about anything, they talk about cricket, but mostly they just look at the cricket politics. That was also a big topic. Otherwise, they just look at their phone now. But when some discussion came up in the presence of Ishvar Chandra Vidyasagar and the young man, Bhaktivinoda, was there, this topic came up. And Ishvar Chandra said, since none of us has ever seen God, it's best that we don't talk about him. Then, as a young, as a young man, even though his teacher was such a big man, he said to him that, well, you wrote in a book, a children's book, Bodhodai, that God is formless and pure consciousness. So if you haven't seen God, then why did you write this about him? God is omnipotent. So he asked that question to him. But you know, Thakur was one of the first ever students at Calcutta University in 1856. When it entered, and it was, education was in English language, and he became very attracted to study English authors, and he became very impressed with what they said. It seemed to him very impressive. He himself wrote an English poem as a young man, and started giving talks. At this time, he became very interested to study the Brahma Dharma, Christianity, the Bible, the Quran. He was inquisitive. He wanted to find out. He thought that Christianity was superior to the Brahma religion because in Christianity they accept a personal God. In 1858, Kedarnath is still a young man at this time. The culture, even now, it's different. It's changing somewhat, but someone in their 20s, they're not really considered a man. Srila Prabhupada would talk about his boys and girls. It's very different in America. But they're still considered a boy at the age of... They may be married, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was married. They may have children, but they're still considered like children. It's not a bad system because in youth one tends to be foolish. So they're kept under the control of the older people, the parents. So, and you see that people in youth, they pick up bad habits and then they spoil their whole life. And they get into a bad track. So that was the system. So, as a young man, he went to Puri, Jagannath Puri. In those days, nowadays you get on a train in the morning and that's to Bhuvanesh. Or you get on a train at night and the next morning you're in Puri. In those days, the fastest you could go would be, of course people would usually stop on the way at the different holy places also, and take a somewhat circuitous route. But probably the fastest you could go would be, 1 week or something. You have to go by land. You can go by boat also, but it depends on the season. At this season, you wouldn't want to go by boat because it's dangerous with the weather is very dangerous. So anyway, on the way back, he stopped at the Chotigram, which was that was owned or overseen by his maternal grandfather, I believe it was maternal grandfather, Krishna Vallabh Datta, who was a great Vaishnava, and it was almost as if he was waiting for this young man to come, because when Kedarnath came, he told him, gave him a blessing or a prophecy, you'll be a great Vaishnava. At this time, Kedarnath was showing no sign of being a Vaishnava. You'll be a great Vaishnava. And Krishna Vallabh Datta said that, and then he left this world. He was like a yogi. He just passed away. Ishwarchandra Vidyasagar arranged for Kedarnath to get a job teaching in Orisha, in the Cuttack Government Secondary School. Then, shortly after that, he was given headmaster's position at a school in Bhadrak. This is all in Orissa. He studied the various religious institutions in Orissa and wrote a book in English called The Maths of Orissa. He also wrote a work under the pen name Satchidananda Premalankar called Sri Chaitanya Gita. The Vaishnavas at Bhagnapara, which is traditionally a great center of Vaishnavism, that's close to Kalna, Ambika Kalna, but that doesn't mean anything to all of you. So the Vaishnavas at Bhagnapara gave him the title Bhaktivinod. That was commonly done, that people who were practicing the give them that, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati continued that with his disciples, giving titles. So among the Vaishnavas then, Kedarnath became known as Satchidananda Bhaktivinod. Then he was transferred in his, as a school teacher, headmaster, he was transferred here and there, when he was at Midnapur, his first wife died, and shortly thereafter, he married his second wife, Bhagavati Devi, from whom he had most of his children. Then he was, he went to different places. There were lots of arguments at that time between the Brahma Samaj members and the Christians. Christians were mostly Westerners. There weren't that many Indian converts. There were some, because the Brahmas would argue with the Christians. The Hindus didn't bother, but the Brahmas did. So he would try to mediate between them. And then he started another. There was the Brahma Samaj, and he started a group called the Bratri Samaj. Brother means brotherhood. So he was trying to bring everyone together. Then, he was transferred here and there, Chuadanga, Ranagat, then he was transferred to Chapra in Bihar. From there, he made his first visit to Vrindavan, traveling on the way, as usually pilgrims used to do. They would stop at different holy places on the way. If you go in North India, along the Ganga and even away from the Ganga, there's so many important holy places. So the pilgrims would usually stop at all these holy places on the way to, if they're going to Vrindavan or wherever they're going. He preparing himself, because he thought, I'm a teacher, I'll become a magistrate. So for that, he learned Urdu and Persian. And again, being transferred from this place to that place. And in Dinajpur, famously, he gave a lecture, which is it's published and still available, the text of that speech. He gave a speech in English called The Bhagavad, Its Philosophy, Its Ethics, and Its Theology. Because the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, had come under much attack from the British as being something that was the basis of the immorality of the Hindu religion. Towards the late 1860s, after he returned to Calcutta, he was trying to find copies of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It wasn't printed at the time. There were manuscripts, so he was trying to get copies, and Bhagavatam. Then he was engaged in the management of the temple at Puri. He lived there for over 5 years, from 1869 to 1874, in the government service as a magistrate. At that time, he punished one yogi called Bhishikeshan, who presented himself as a yogi. He had yogic powers, and he would live in the jungle, in the ashram in the jungle, and he would call the women, married women, to come to enjoy with him, which was not very popular. He declared himself an avatar of Mahavishnu, and he told everyone that he was going to take a four-armed form and destroy all these foreigners, the British. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a servant of the British government, took the opportunity to arrest him and for being against the British government. Actually, he was cheating the people by presenting himself as an avatar of Vishnu, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur couldn't arrest him for that. So he had him arrested. He took Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he came to his ashram with all the police, you could nowadays we'd call the police, and they were afraid. They were afraid to go near him because he had mystic powers. But Bhaktivinoda encouraged them and took him and locked him up, and he was threatening them. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his hair cut. Then he lost. What happened immediately when Bhaktivinoda arrested him and put him in prison, then Bhaktivinoda and all his family members became extremely sick, as if they were going to die. And everyone was telling Bhaktivinoda, yeah, just let him go, let him go. And Bhaktivinoda said, no, no, no. He had his hair cut off, and then he died in police custody. Nowadays that would be questioned. In those days, who is there to question? And there were others like this also. Bhishikishan was famous for that. But there were others who Bhaktivinoda chastised. Well, in Puri, Bhaktivinoda Thakur did a lot of study. He learned Sanskrit. And then he studied so many books, the Shatshandarbha of Jiva Goswami, Govinda Bhasha and Siddhanta Ratnam, Prameya Ratnavali of Baladev Vidyabhushan. He studied Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He studied so much in order to demonstrate that if you're going to understand what is Vaishnavism, you're going to have to learn about it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he founded a group for discussion of the Bhagavatam in Orissa, in Puri. And many of the leading prominent people there would come to listen to him. One, Raghunath Das Babaji, who was living in Puri at the time, criticized, who is this person to speak on Bhagavatam? But that Babaji became very sick, and Jagannath told him to go and beg forgiveness from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which he did, and then he was cured. Up to the present day in Puri, in the Jagannath temple, the learned scholars come to sit at the one place called the Mukti Mandap, and there they discuss various issues about temple management, and they may have some philosophical discussion, or Mayavad. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur would sit next to the Lakshmi temple there within the Jagannath temple complex, near to where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footprints are there in the stone, because the stone melted when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was standing there and his footprints are there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur would not associate with the Mayavadis, and he went to another place and he discussed the Bhagavatam, and then Vaishnavas came to listen to him there, and that place became known as the Bhakti Mandap, or the Bhakti Prangan. At this time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, I believe that was his first Sanskrit work, Datta Kostuba, Krishna Sanghita. During this time, in Puri, Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur was born, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was praying to Krishna that I'm doing what I can, but there's so much to do. And unless you personally appear, you send a ray of your potency, send to this world a ray, someone who can really take this mission forward. And that was Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, which they was understood. He was born with his Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born with his umbilical cord wrapped around his body like a brahmanas thread. 6 months after his birth, the Rath Yatra, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's renting a house on the what's called the main road in Puri where the Rath Yatra comes. And 6 months after Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born, the Rath Yatra came and the chariot stopped in front of Bhaktivinoda's house. Jagannath wouldn't go any further. Stopped there for 3 days. And at the Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for continuous sankirtan to be done there for Jagannath during those 3 days. And during that time, Bhaktivinoda's wife, Bhagavati Devi, brought the child to touch at the lotus feet of Jagannath, at which spontaneously a garland fell around the body of that baby. So Bhaktivinoda had some insight that this child is going to be the child I prayed for a ray of Vishnu to come. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, what shall we say about his writings? He was a family man. He had 13 children, ultimately, which wasn't unusual in those days. Gradually, they didn't all come at once. And he had government responsibility. He was a very responsible person. He got as highly positioned in the British administration as they would allow an Indian to come. And after he retired, one of his British bosses said, "I would have promoted you further, but we weren't allowed to. They could only go so high." And it really, by his intelligence and his ability, Bhaktivinoda Thakur disproved the British theory that Indians are inferior and less intelligent. Working as a magistrate, he would hear the details of the case, both sides, and decide it like that. So he would just finish so many cases quickly. He was very quick and thorough as a magistrate. So he was doing all this, and in the meantime, he wrote so many books. He would come home in the evening, take rest early, about 8 o'clock, then he'd get up at 12 o'clock and write. And then he would go on with his writing. He was chanting rounds, offering worship, so many things he was doing. But he wrote so many books, over 100 books in Sanskrit, Bengali, English, and some legal things he wrote in Urdu, Persian also. His writings will always be important, just like Vedvyasa's writings. They don't become outdated. They speak on the platform of eternality. There's one devotee in India, Vidvan Gauranga Prabhu, who you know and you know. And he's very much into studying not only Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but all the Acharya's writings, and very much into showing that Srila Prabhupada's writings, they fully represent the teachings of the previous Acharyas. But he has a special, it seems to me, affinity for Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because really, his writings are, what can you say? You can't say that Jiva Goswami is any less or Rupa Goswami is any less. But anyway, he wrote to me in an email about Amnai Sutra, one of the writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he wrote to me that Amnai Sutra presents the essence of Vedic knowledge. Each quote that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives for each sutra, because what he wrote the essence of Vedic knowledge in the Amnai Sutra, which sutra means short statement. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gave his own commentary on that, showing the veracity of each statement by quoting from Shastra. Each quote that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives for each sutra is power-packed, and it would take much time to point out how Prabhupada and the previous acharyas have explained those quotes. For each of the 130 sutras, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur unfailingly quotes from the Shruti, Smriti, and an acharya, from three sources. It is unbelievable. Manusha rachite nare oiche grantha dhanya applies here too. That's a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, writing about Chaitanya Bhagavat, says that this was not possible to write such a work as Chaitanya Bhagavat, not possible to write such a glorious book by any ordinary man. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, among his gifts, was introducing to the intelligentsia of Bengal the not only the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the teachings of other sampradayas also. And he had books from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, especially the Artha Panchakam he gave by the Lokpila Acharya. He gave much importance to that. And from the Madhva Sampradaya. So that initiative was continued by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He'd get books from different sampradayas, translate them into Bengali, print them, make them available. And remember, he was doing this that so many other things he was doing. After 5 years in Puri, he returned to Calcutta, he returned to Bengal, and then he would travel widely, especially in Bengal. At one point, he went to Vrindavan again. When he returned to Calcutta, he dug a house. He dug the foundations for a house, Bhakti Bhavan, in the center of Calcutta. During the course of building, a deity of Kurmadev was unearthed, and at this time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this was 1882. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave to the 8-year-old boy, Bimala Prasad, later to be Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this Kurmadev deity to worship. And at this time also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to Mayapur for the first time. He was transferred to so many places. He gave initiation to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the Harinam Mantra and Nrsingha Mantra. You may say, well, Gorky Shodas Babaji was the guru. Yeah, but there's Harinam initiation and there's Diksha by Mantra. He established a printing press, Chaitanya Yantra. Yantra means machine. He was one who was, 1886, he established the Vishwa Vaishnav Sabha. And there he would give lectures on Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And remember, now we have a worldwide ISKCON, we have Prabhupada's books, we have access to so many writings. But at that time, all these things weren't well known. In 1887, he visited Tarakeshwar, which is the most famous place in Bengal for worship of Lord Shiva. And at this time, Bhaktivinoda was thinking, I'll leave everything, and he's planning on leaving everything and just going to live in Vrindavan. But while he was at Tarakeshwar, Lord Shiva came to him in a dream and said, you want to go to Vrindavan, but there's so much work to do in Navadvip Dham. You go there instead. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for him, his work to be transferred to Krishnanagar, which is a town close to Navadvip. While he was visiting the modern city, what's called Navadvip, the town now called Navadvip, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was beginning to doubt if the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is said to be Navadvip town, actually was, because there were so many reasons to doubt that. The birthplace was there, but that had only been established fairly recently, because Navadvip, the old Mayapur, which is said as to be the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bhakti Ratnaka, the course of the Ganga had changed due to floods, and what is said, the present Navadvip town was only established relatively recently, and then people said this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his doubts. Then one night, he was staying in a dharmshala. It's like a guest house, you could say, something like that. How do you explain what a dharmshala is? He was looking out over the Ganga. Navadvip is over there, and he looked on, and he saw the other side. And in the night, he saw huge illumination on the other side of the Ganga. Now, that wouldn't be surprising in the present day when we have neon lights and so many things, but it was definitely very surprising. What's going on over there on the other side? So the next morning, he went there, inquired there, went to the other side and heard that this place is called Balal Dighi, and around here is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that really set him off. And then he started researching all maps and documents and speaking to local people. And then they found close to there is a village called Mirpur, inhabited by Muslims, and the Bhakti Ratnaka, which was written about 100 years after the departure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by a devotee in the line of Gopal Bhatta Goswami Narahari Chakravarti, refers to Mayapur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, researching old maps and documents, knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace was on the other side of the Ganga, at Mayapur, not in the present Navadvip town. And that was eventually confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji. And then he was considered the leader of the Vaishnavas at that time. And when he went there, he saw one area covered in tulsi. And Jagannath Das Babaji, even though he was 120 years old at the time, was carried here and there in a basket. His servant, Bihari Das Babaji, would carry him, Jagannath Das Babaji, in a basket on his head. This Bihari was very, very strong. But then he put the basket down, and Jagannath Das Babaji, he was so old and couldn't move, but he jumped up in the air. And when he came to Mayapur, so this is the place. Bhaktivinoda remained in Calcutta. And in 1888, he purchased some land close to, in the Navadvip area, which he called Surabhi Kunj. Then he got transferred to East Bengal. And there he did a lot of preaching, and he was transferred here and there and here and there and here and there. There are so many things. Of course, I'm skipping over so many things. We only have a limited time. But he was very concerned. He wanted to leave all this, and he wanted to, because he got the order to work in Navadvip Dham. During this time he was widely traveling, preaching, and then he was propagating the actual birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And for this purpose, he established the Navadvip Dham Pracharini Sabha with many prominent Vaishnavas. And then he was able to make a temple, get land and make a temple there. If you go now, you'll see it. To Mayapur, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'll see a quite a grand temple. That was built by Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur after the departure of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Otherwise, it was just something small, and it was very difficult to get anyone to stay there, just in the middle of nowhere with tigers running around. And, well, not that many, but that was very common in most of India at that time. Now you hardly find any tiger. I've never seen a tiger. Maybe I saw it in a zoo somewhere, but I didn't see in there. But it was very common, even up to the time of Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur. There's lots of forest and jungle. Leopards you still see. But tigers you don't see, hardly. So who would want to stay there? It's just very rough conditions and no one's there. You're all on your own. And you have to have a Brahmin to do the worship. So it's very tough. And eventually he sent Bhaktisthan Sahasrara. Bhaktivinoda was living in, he retired and went to live at Surabhi Kunj in Godrumadweep. But then after some time, leaving out a lot of things, he also purchased property on which Swananda Sukhata Kunj was going to be built later. Then after some time he went to Puri, was living in Puri at Bhakti Kuti, just close to Haridas Thakur Samadhi. Just in front of the ocean. Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur was living there with him. And Bhaktisthan Sahasrara, he really didn't like this Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham thing, which is very prominent in Puri, still is prominent in Puri. And this Radharaman Charan Das Babaji, he was associated with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktisthan Sahasrara didn't like him at all, and he was causing a lot of disturbance. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur told him, because it became quite a tense situation, and some people said they wanted to kill Bhaktisthan Sahasrara because he was so much against this bogus mantra. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent Bhaktisthan Sahasrara to, you go and live in Mayapur, oversee the affairs there, because we established this temple, but it's chaos. We can't get any pujari to stay. We don't know what's going on. So he went there. And that's an... Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to... and skipping over so many things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to stay in Navari Dham. And at this time, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings that were being circulated in Bengal. So one young man had read some of his writings and he knew, this man is my guru. Oh, sorry, that's what he thought. So he came from East Bengal to Godrumadweep, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living, and he was initiated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur was there at the time, and his name was Jagadish, and he was known as Jagadish Bhakti Pradeep. And from the beginning, Bhaktivinoda Thakur told him, you take instruction from Saraswati, Siddhanta Saraswati. And after the passing of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this Jagadish Bhakti Pradeep became the second sannyasi of the Gauriya mission. The first was Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur himself. So he was actually initiated first by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and then took sannyasin. Oh, and he was given mantra initiation by Bhaktisthan Sahasrara. This is an unusual thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave some mantras to Jagadish, but he told him to take other mantras from Siddhanta Saraswati. And there's so many things. I wrote some book on Bhaktisthan Sahasrara. I could make that book much bigger now if I was to go back to it. There's so many things. There was a big conference being called in Bengal to discuss various matters of Vaishnava understanding, in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur was expected to play a major part. One of the major issues was, can non-Brahmins be made into Brahmins in the name of being a Vaishnava? Bhaktivinoda Thakur was expected to go there, but he was at that time showing the pastime of sickness, and he was unable to go, so he sent Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who had a rousing victory at Baligai. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote a commentary on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, sub-commentary, which was, he started it while Bhaktivinoda Thakur was still in this world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very pleased with that. Just shortly before he left this world, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very sick, and his family members took him to Calcutta. And on June the 23rd, 1914, today is June the 17th in India, this will be on June the 18th, they'll celebrate this. On the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit, Bhaktivinoda Thakur from Calcutta left this world. Which we're celebrating today. As he himself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, wrote about Haridas Thakur, he reasons ill who tell that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. A Vaishnava dies to live, and living tries to spread the holy name around. Srila Sachidananda Thakur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Hare Krishna.